Patricia Neal in Buenos Aires, Argentina.
A man who spent more than a decade helping people on the Pine Ridge Reservation died in a traffic accident last week. South Dakota Public Broadcasting's Gary Ellenbolt reports.
58-year-old Thomas Stryker of Nevada City, California, learned about conditions on Pine Ridge in 2002, and he spent the rest of his life working to help people on the reservation. The Wyoming Highway Patrol says Stryker was traveling on Interstate 80 when he lost control of his van on an icy part of the highway. Stryker began his advocacy work in his home city in California. He handed out food vouchers and served hot meals to homeless people through his nonprofit organization, Divine Spark. For National Native News, I'm Gary Ellenbolt.
On this day in 1933, author, lawyer, and champion of American Indian rights, Vine DeLauria Jr. was born. He was well known for his book, Custer Died for Your Sins, an Indian Manifesto. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. Every Alaskan can support causes and organizations they care about when they file for a permanent fund dividend. Use PIC-CLIC-GIVE when filing online for your PFD. When you select KNBA-FM, Kawanic Broadcast Corporation, you support National Native News. With one donation at a time, good things will happen all over Alaska.
Native Voice One. The Native American Radio Service.
Just 7 minutes after 3 o'clock, you're in tune with KTOO News in Juneau, Alaska, where we are currently in the middle of our pledge drive. So if you want to give us a call at 586-3636 or 1-800-478-3636, Ann Fuller is standing by those two telephone numbers ready to take your call. We're also available online for your pledges at www.ktoo.org. So, my first guest is going to be doing a special show at the Marie Drake Planetarium tonight, right?
That's right, Pat. Yeah. Thanks for having me.
So, Steve, Steve Kosas, tell us what you're planning on doing here. This is the Big Bang for Beginners.
That's right.
So, we don't have to do it ourselves. We can let the experts take care of it, right?
Unless you want to make your own Big Bang in a laboratory or in your bedroom.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is what they're possibly doing with the Large Hadron Collider in Europe. They might be able to have a Big Bang in a laboratory. So that's our show tonight, 6:30 p.m., and after the Big Bang show, we'll use the Spitz A3P projector and look at the stars tonight.
So I think anybody who's taken a high school physics course or so, maybe somewhere before that in the modern schooling system, is familiar with the phrase Big Bang, but maybe we should clarify that what we're talking about here is the beginning of the universe, right?
Well, yeah, Big Bang comes under the science of cosmology, which is the study of the large-scale structure of the universe and the evolution of the universe. But what amazes me about the Big Bang is it and black holes and the expansion of the universe can all be derived from Einstein's general theory of relativity, which was published in 1915. Mm-hmm. So and we're still working and finding out new things about the general theory of relativity and the different solutions to it. Because there's different solutions to the general theory of relativity that gave us the model of the Big Bang and the expansion of the universe and black holes. And then they were observed. So they were first predicted from the mathematics of Einstein's general theory of relativity, and then they were observed.
There's some revolution involved in this idea. In other words, we didn't always believe that that was the way the universe started. There were other theories that came before that, and then essentially Einstein's theory of relativity said, well, if we find these things to be there, then this has to be the explanation of how that came about. Is that a fair statement?
Yes. After Einstein published his general theory of relativity, other scientists, including a Vatican astronomer, Lemaître, showed that solutions of it showed that we had a dynamic universe that had a beginning and an end rather than a static, steady-state universe.
Now, the business of the red shift and that sort of stuff, that's part of this same thing. In other words, the fact that we can determine that stars are moving away from us at incredibly high speeds is part of the Big Bang thing.
Well, that's one of the pieces of evidence for the Big Bang. The probably the most famous or probably the most productive astronomer of the 20th century, Edwin Hubble, first published that galaxies, when they're further away, they're moving faster from us. And as you just said, Pat, there's a red shift. That's from the Doppler effect. Objects moving away from us are shifted in frequency to lower frequencies, which is called red shift. Objects coming towards us are shifted towards higher frequencies, which is blue shift.
Mm-hmm.
But the most important evidence for the Big Bang is the cosmic background radiation, which was first detected in the 60s. And Wilson and Penzias, who detected it, working for Bell Labs at the time, won the Nobel Prize for that.
I'm always amazed at the amount of research that came out of Bell Labs. It was an amazingly different scientific organization because, in essence, they didn't give the scientists who worked there a fiat to produce something specific. They just basically said, go in the lab and work.
And very productive. IBM also had a pure research lab. And I don't know if anyone's heard of fractals and the Mandelbrot set, but Benoit Mandelbrot worked at the IBM Watson Research Center, which was similar in that the scientists there didn't have a job description. They could pretty much pursue anything they wanted to.
Do we have anything like that now? Are there any pure research labs in America?
Well, yeah, there are. The government has ARPA and DARPA, Advanced Research Project Agency, and they do fund pure research, both in physics and math.
Yeah, but many times I think I hear us people accuse the United States of having stepped back from pure science, and the word on the street is that basically all we're really doing is putting more knobs on our TV sets.
Well, currently, I just mentioned government pure research funding. As far as private companies funding pure research, the only one I'm currently aware of is that I believe it's at Google. The people there are allowed to use 10% of their time to work on anything they want. Well, it's either 5 or 10%.
Mm-hmm.
But it isn't 100% of the time, though.
No, it certainly isn't. That was the wonder of Bell Labs. I mean, they were owned by essentially the monopoly that controlled the telephone system, so there was really no incentive for them to improve the telephone system at all. So they turned them loose on pure research, and those guys invented things like the transistor and other little items like that. Yeah,
I believe Claude Shannon worked at Bell Labs, too, and he developed information theory.
Yeah, yeah. So now, cosmology, which the term that you used at the beginning here, a great deal of what I know about cosmology comes from a book called A Brief History of Time, which is one of the fairly recent kind of publicly accessible books on the beginning on the theories of how the universe. But the way we deal with this involves a lot of sitting around and thinking about it.
Well, it's more than just thinking. The understanding of the Big Bang cosmology is all from mathematics. I mean, mathematics is the language of science, and the if you look at any of Hawking's actual publications for science, they're all mathematics. There's very little prose in Hawking's, like his publications on gravitation, his publications on black holes, is all mathematics, and that's basically how science is done, is through mathematics. And the books we read as lay persons are in a sense, a translation from the mathematics into prose.
So there's this question that comes up then, Steve. How are you going to make this interesting tonight?
Well, the typical way, I have a lot of computer visualizations, and I am going to talk about some of the Big Bang gang, which was Hubble and Gamow and Lemaître and Einstein and their personalities, and how there was a competing theory to the Big Bang called the steady state theory, and about how these two theories, why the Big Bang theory ended up the accepted theory and why steady state theory was dropped.
So what time does your show start?
Our show starts at 6:30 p.m. at the Planetarium. The show's free. It's suitable for all ages. And after the Big Bang talk, we'll bring up the projector and look at what the stars will appear like tonight if it was clear.
Okay. So the Big Bang for Beginners, 6:30 tonight at Marie Drake Planetarium. Very briefly, Steve, how do you get there?
Well, it's right between the Juneau High School and the Harborview School. It's behind that artificial turf field with the fence around it.
And
so it's on Glacier Avenue.
Not much pressure on the parking lots around there, so easy to park.
True. There isn't gold. I don't know if I think the gold medal basketball is over. So okay. So yeah, it should be better parking.
It was a little crowded last week. Let me tell you. Yeah, okay. All right. Hey, great show. I'm hoping you show a crowd, and let's go out with "Black Hole Sun" by Soundgarden. Okay?
Thanks, Pat.
About 19 minutes after 3 o'clock in the afternoon, the Black Hole Sun theme tells us that tonight is the program on the Big Bang for Beginners at Marie Drake Planetarium, starting at 6:30 with Steve Kosas talking about that subject, and then the usual opportunity to see what it's like above the clouds that are almost always over Juneau, keeping us from seeing the sky. For the rest of the day, mostly cloudy, scattered snow showers, highs around 39, south winds 10 miles per hour. And then tonight, guess what? Mostly cloudy, scattered rain showers in the evening, isolated snow showers late. But all that rain and precipitation is melting the snow. So maybe this time when the flowers peek their heads through, they can keep on growing. I hope so. I hope it's spring. Anyway, my next guests are here to tell us about a rally that is coming up Thursday, right in front of the Alaska State Capitol. And the rally will go from there to the Walter Soboloff Center site. It is a rally in support of the Choose Respect campaign. Mike Lessman, Special Assistant to the Office of the Governor, and Sarah Lund is here. Tell us about what's happening.
Yeah, good afternoon, Pat. The Choose Respect campaign is an initiative, Governor Parnell's initiative to end domestic violence and sexual assault here in Alaska. This will be the fourth march that communities all over Alaska have marched and rallied on the fourth Thursday, I believe it would be, of March. It started in 2010 in terms of the marches. I believe there were 18 communities that year that organized on that date, and we were at 140 plus, I think last count, 143 communities across the state that will be rallying on or about the fourth Thursday of March.
How many people do you expect will come out in Juneau?
Oh my gosh.
What are you hoping?
500.
500?
Sure.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. What'd you get last time?
I'm not quite sure.
Huh?
350?
Yeah, okay.
Sounds like a good guess.
Yeah. So 500 sounds like a reasonable number. Yeah. Particularly if we Wednesday, mostly cloudy, slight chance of rain and snow in the morning, highs around 38, southeast winds 5 miles per hour, shifting south northwest in the afternoon. So if that rain and snow gets over within the morning, you could get a pop of a blue sky and this thing take off. This starts at what time?
Noon,
okay. And are we talking about, what, about an hour of the whole?
About.
Run? Yeah. Okay, maybe so an employee of the in the area down could come to the rally,
right?
Eat lunch
perfect.
In the midst of it, and then get back to the office on time and like that. Good,
absolutely.
Good. Just before we open the mics, I didn't want to stick you with the problem, but I am interested in the statistic we discussed. The Choose Respect program has been now in existence since 2010. And so I was asking you before we open up the microphones what kind of statistical measures we were seeing of the effectiveness of the campaign. And you said a very interesting thing just before we went on the air, which was?
Yeah, one thing we know, Pat, is that we've seen an increase in reporting. And, you know, on the surface, one may think that means more abuse and that's a bad mark. But, in fact, it doesn't necessarily mean that there's more going on. It means that more people are aware and willing to come out and speak about the issue, willing to report that which has happened to them or others. And that's a very important part of the governor's initiative. He and the First Lady both want to raise awareness to this epidemic in our state. We want to give people courage to talk about it so that they can get the support and the services they need, and we can hold offenders accountable.
How does Alaska compare to other states?
Unfortunately, we're at the top. We're leading in several of these categories.
Yeah.
I remember last time Mike and I were on the show, and Mike said that the governor's hope is to take away the shame and take away the blame. No shame, no blame. And I think that we're seeing that in people coming forward, being more willing to risk, because it's very vulnerable to say this is happening to me. You know, a person is risking quite a lot. It takes a lot of courage, so it's really neat that.
Yeah, particularly if it leads into the legal system, because very often the victim gets victimized on the
right.
You know, in the process of a trial or something like that, which is unfortunate. It's the way the law is constructed that that seems to be the model. But the other thing that I'm real hopeful, I'm seeing a lot of hope, is the other day I had Rachel Brown in from the Aware Shelter, and they're doing a training in April. They start now, as a matter of fact, on Monday, or on April 1st. And that training will go all the way through the month of April. And she told me that they have people who come out not because they're trying to get a job at Aware Shelter or to begin volunteering at Aware Shelter, but just because they want to know more about the subject of domestic abuse. So I think we have a growing awareness. You can't turn around without running into Choose Respect, which I think is a real good thing because it means that it's there in front of you a lot.
Yeah, it's a great thing. And, you know, I think we see it manifest also in prevention programming, coaching boys into men, for example. You know, when we started that a few years ago, there was one team, the Thunder Mountain High School basketball team, and now in Juneau, I think we've got five teams. So it's, and it's also gone statewide. So that's also part of the Choose Respect, the prevention programming that's growing.
Mike, is a program like this expensive?
Well, I think it's expensive I think it's more expensive not to address the issue.
There's actually, I mean, can we track costs that are due to domestic violence?
I think you can track all kinds of health costs and costs in the correctional system. Many others, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. So what will happen at the rally?
Well, our Department of Health and Social Services Commissioner, Bill Struer, will be the state official leading Juneau's march this year. The governor and the first lady are going to be in Palmer, leading the good people of Palmer. So Commissioner Struer, and I'm hopeful that many, many state employees and other members of the community will gather on the steps. There will be some comments from Commissioner Struer and others either before they leave or once they get down to the Walter Sobolev Center. I hope that you will see plenty of signs and banners and maybe hear some people in the crowd chanting with this slogan or that slogan. You know, this is really about an opportunity for the community to lend courage to victims and survivors by taking a visible and a vocal stand against this issue.
And so this begins at noon right in front of the state capitol. Basically, you just show up, right?
Exactly.
A few minutes before, maybe, to get a spot near the front so you can hear the speakers and like that. And then walk down to Sobolev Center and back to work by 1 o'clock, and you will have done a great civic duty, I think.
And Heritage Coffee is supplying some hot beverages when you get to the Walter Sobolev Center.
All right.
The Rookery is also going to supply some refreshments.
Outstanding. Well, thank you very much, Mike, and thank you very much, Sarah, for coming in, for telling us about this. Let's do the Writer's Almanac next, shall we?
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Tuesday, the 26th of March, 2013. It's the birthday of A.E. Housman, born Worcestershire, England, 1859, the poet who gave us the lines, "Loveliest of trees, the cherry now is hung with bloom along the bough, and stands about the woodland ride wearing white for Eastertide." It's the birthday of Tennessee Williams, Columbus, Mississippi, 1911. Wanted to become a playwright when he was 18 and saw a production of Ibsen's Ghosts. His father made him go to work in a shoe factory, where Williams worked with a man whose name was Stanley Kowalski. He wrote plays while he worked a variety of odd jobs, plays produced by small theater companies. Didn't earn him much money. He was nearly broke in 1944 when The Glass Menagerie was produced. A big success, first in Chicago, then on Broadway. 3 years later came A Streetcar Named Desire, with Marlon Brando playing a character named Stanley Kowalski. It's the birthday of Robert Frost, 1874, in San Francisco. Moved to Massachusetts when he was 11. Struggled to become a poet. He was 39 before he published his first collection of poems, A Boy's Will. Robert Frost, who was out of fashion almost from the beginning, interested in traditional meter and rhyme when his contemporaries were writing in free verse. Early years were rough. Father was a heavy drinker, died of TB when the boy was 12. Family was left impoverished. Frost had to drop out of college during his first year to go to work. He was so depressed at one point he walked into the dismal swamp and considered drowning himself. Taught school for a few years, never enjoyed it. He and his wife Eleanor lost their first child. He fell into despair, barely making ends meet, his marriage on the rocks. That was the year he tried his hand at raising poultry on a 30-acre farm in Derry, New Hampshire. The farm inspired some fine poems,
but Frost was a terrible farmer. And it's the birthday of the poet Gregory Corso, born on Bleecker Street in Greenwich Village, New York City, 1930. Gregory Corso, who said, "Standing on a street corner, waiting for no one, is power." His parents were Italian teenagers. Mother went back to Italy, left the baby behind. Corso said, "I never saw my mother. I don't know what happened to her." The father was drafted into the army. The boy spent his childhood in a series of orphanages, foster homes, jails. When he was 16, went to prison for 3 years for stealing food from a restaurant. In 1950, he met the poet Allen Ginsberg. Corso had started writing poetry in prison, and he became one of the leading poets of the Beat movement. Here's a poem for today by David Ignato, entitled "Listening." You wept in your mother's arms, and I knew that from then on I was to forget myself. Listening to your sobs, I was resolved against my will to do well by us. And so I said without thinking, in great panic, to do wrong in one's own judgment, though others thrive by it, is the right road to blessedness. Not to submit to error is in itself wrong and pride. Standing beside you, I took an oath to make your life simpler by complicating mine. And what I always thought would happen did. I was lifted up in joy. Listening, a poem by David Ignato, from his collection I Have a Name, published by Wesleyan and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac. Supported by Reputation.com, helping individuals and businesses make their best impression where people learn about them first, on the Internet. Learn more at 1-800-REPUTATION. Produced by Nick Vetter. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
It's about 27 minutes before 4 o'clock. You're in tune with KTOO News. We're in the middle of our pledge week, and we would ask you to please call 586-3636 or 1-800-478-3636 if you're outside the Juneau area, and pledge your support for KTOO Public Radio here in Southeast Alaska. www.ktoo.org is our website. You can go on there if you don't want to make the phone call, and you can fill the form out and pledge your support to us right there. There's a couple people standing by the phone, so give them a call, because they're sitting out there kind of wondering if somebody's going to give them a ring. So, my next two guests are going to do a concert here in town on Thursday. Well, actually not here in town, but out at the UAS Rec Center. You've been listening to Harrison B's music for the last 2 weeks on our station, fairly heavily promoted, because he was also part of a KRNN special thing over at the Goldtown Theater. He's here with Cole Paramore, who's... going to play drums, I guess, in this little gig that you're setting up for Thursday night? Yeah, Thursday night.
Wednesday night.
Wednesday night, yeah. So, UAS Rec Center, kind of a cool venue. But you said you had a good time down at the Goldtown Theater.
I did, yeah. And it's two different venues. It's two different friends of mine. This will be a full band concert, and the Goldtown was more of an acoustic evening with myself and C. Scott Fry. And it was a lot of fun and full and intent on having another great one, different dynamic with Sammy Burroughs. And so we're going to be playing some blues together and also some of our own catalogs separately, and we're really excited about it.
Yeah. So we were talking before, and you're a Nashville kid.
That is correct.
Yeah, so you grew up around the music all your life, right?
Yes, sir, I did. My father was lightly involved with the Opry a lot of times growing up, and so he was in human resources and dealt a lot in that aspect. So he'd always tell me the stories. But beyond that, pretty isolated from the scene, just the radio like anybody else in America.
So I always dislike this question, but I'll go ahead and ask it anyway.
Okay.
So when did you start hearing blues and knowing that's what you wanted to do with your fingers?
Early on in the listening process, coming across music that I enjoyed, I started out with country. moved on and evolved. And once I found roots blues, that's kind of when it hit me. I found it to be kind of the purest form of forming connection between the soul and the fingers. And for me, that's what it's all about, is sharing that moment with people. And so it struck me hard. And it's just like when you love a woman, when you know, you know. And there's really no more question. And so, yeah, I've been blues-based ever since.
So, Cole, you're picking up the drums behind this thing. How much have you worked with them?
Actually, let's see. I think we started playing together maybe 2 or 3 years ago, the first time he came up to do music in particular here. And I was connected by my dad, actually, who was working out at the rec center. And Jordan had a gig out at the rec center, similar to the one we're doing tomorrow. And I needed a drummer, so I stepped up and just kind of worked. There was a connection, and I started learning all the tunes. And then before you know, we're playing four-hour sets at the bars, and, you know, I'm just trying to keep up. But, yeah, it's worked really well since, and he's been up every summer since then. And, you know, I assume we'll continue to play this summer, too.
So, Harrison, is he any good?
Well, if you've heard him, then I don't need to answer that question. But, you know, every time I hear Cole play, it really is a treat, because as young as he is, if I had half the skill he did at his age, I'd be all the better for it. And so it's a pleasure to watch him as he continues to just become more and more masterful on the sticks and the skins. And it's a joy to play with him. It truly is.
Where'd you start, Cole?
I started maybe 6 years or so ago. I played clarinet for much longer than I wish I had, and then realized that I couldn't play all the rock music I was listening to very well on the clarinet. So, okay, well, this is stupid. And asked my parents almost, you know, kind of half jokingly if I could get a drum set, and they said yes, which, you know, I still don't know. I still don't agree with that, but I, you know.
You wouldn't let your kid do that, right?
Yeah, no kids. I wouldn't even let myself do it, but I did, and yeah, I just loved it ever since. Promptly dropped the clarinet from my repertoire, and yeah, I've been playing drums ever since. It's like Jordan said, you know, he found blues in a certain way, and I found the drums in a certain way.
Okay, so you came in through rock. How much shift do you have to do in order to drum for this guy?
You know, not a lot, and as I progress, I find that I take something new from every musical style I find myself in. So I'm going to school currently in Bellingham, so I'm here for spring break right now, but when I'm in Bellingham, I'm playing mostly jazz, and so, you know, personally, I listen to, you know, anywhere from electronic music to rock, indie rock, and then when someone like Jordan comes into play, you know, I hadn't really experienced much blues, and so he provides that, you know, the blues influence, whereas school is kind of the jazz influence, and then, you know, the music my brother was listening to and my dad was listening to, it all kind of melds in, and I enjoy kind of switching between styles and letting each style influence the other ones.
There's a real difference between the way a musician hears music and someone who's not involved in music, hears music. I grew up playing saxophone, and when I hear someone doing a sax solo, what I hear is I can hear what their fingers are doing because I know how they have to do what they're doing to make it sound that way. Is that your experience as well? When you're listening to somebody drum in the back of a record, are you thinking to yourself,
Yeah, absolutely. And it's something that I feel like, at least for the first few years, it's kind of obsessive. You can't hear anything other than your instrument in the music. And I've gotten a lot better at pulling back and listening to each element and really, like, if I'm going to focus on something, don't make it just the drums. You know, I focus on the guitar, or the vocals, or the bass line, really, which is of utmost importance to, you know, the rhythm section and connecting with the drums. But it's definitely that way. With each new thing, I start to, you know, like, let's say I dabble with piano a little bit or something. Not only do I kind of understand better what they're doing, but I have a new appreciation for what they're doing. So now some drum parts maybe, or like a guitar part that a non-musician would just kind of take for granted, I feel like I'm able to appreciate more in that it's not that easy.
Yeah, Jordan, is it? You've been doing this longer than he has, so I'm wondering, does that still happen? Is that still the way you hear somebody's voice work a note?
Sure.
Or somebody put a guitar lick in there and you say to yourself, I can do that.
Sure. Well, yeah. Listening as a musician, I guess, is more of an active experience. Like you said, your brain is less interested in, unless you force it to be, accepting the piece on the whole and just enjoying it as an experience, which would typically be a fan or a listener's experience. And it becomes involved, as you said, as in you're working towards understanding what technique they're using, where they're at on the fretboard, visualizing that for yourself, or as a singer, how they're getting to that note, what they're using in terms of a cadence or melody. And, I think it's unique experiences for me, both live music and recorded music, because having dabbled in both, I like listening to live music and hearing, how are they getting the crowd involved? How are they using their voice to complement these instruments? What's the rhythm player doing in order to help build this solo up or mellow it back down? And whereas on a recorded, on that aspect, I put out a record myself, about to do another, and I'm concerned with the whole project as a whole. How does it flow from song 1 to song 12? And also inside the microcosm of a single tune, how and what instruments are used in what way to make this happen. And so I listen to recorded music from always kind of like a producer's standpoint, mm-hmm. trying to accept the whole piece, and live music as an entertainer trying to learn from them.
So now you're doing this in front of a live audience Wednesday night.
Yes, yeah. Sir.
And so I guess the next question is, you described that intimate experience you had over at the Goldtown, where basically it's all acoustic, and it's pretty easy for me to kind of connect that together with you picking up a vibe off the audience and being able to respond to it in your song. When you got the whole band up there, how do you move the whole band to pick up that vibe and do something with it that makes this beyond another time through the song?
It's I think that's a skill that you kind of learn, and I'm still continuing to develop, but Cole really, he understands this with me. It's all about body language, and we've got a certain number of symbols, I guess, that help me relay messages to him as to what we're about to do, and it really is a challenge. And so you learn that when you're just doing it by yourself, you only got one person to kind of help guide. But when you're trying to make a movement as a group of people, the communication is the hardest part. It's the largest challenge. And so you just try and use body language and feel it out together.
So who else playing Wednesday night?
Wednesday night I will be performing myself. Sammy Burroughs will also be playing. He's got a backing band with a drummer named Dale. C. Scott Fry will be playing the bass for both of us. Cole here will be drumming with me as well.
Right.
We're playing a 30-minute set apiece, myself with Cole and a bass player, and Mike Idolog, Sammy and his, and then we're doing another 30-minute set together. We're going to be sharing some tunes from mine and his personally, and then some that we just want to enjoy.
Now, usual kickoff 7 o'clock. I don't think there's a charge for these events out there.
$3 for all non-UAS affiliates.
For non-UAS, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Students get in free. And,
absolutely.
Yeah, okay. All right. So, hey, $3 is... yeah, I can find $3.
Glad to hear. yeah. Otherwise, I'll lend it to
well,
you.
Well, there's times when I can't find $3. That's a different deal. Anyway, hey, great concert. Thanks, guys, for coming down and sort of talking music with us here. And I wish you good luck. I hope you have a crowd.
Sounds good. Thanks.
Let's go out with a little of the sound here, shall we?
Sweet soul, and please let me finish. Lately I feel like this. Lately I feel like moving in slow. Lately I shake it on, shake it on down. Lately I doubt and told you everything. I believe, man, I'll believe most anything, yeah. I can feel it. So I say, hey, man, those fools, man, those stones, man, where are they? Even when we sing, I say, no, man, no, no, well, I'm no, no less. Yeah, you sing with something feeling. Listen to me, y'all. Ain't it funny how a groove seems to hold?
And B, they're doing a concert up on campus Wednesday night at, starting at 7 o'clock in the UAS Rec Center. So you might want to figure out how to rearrange your day and go to that. And also, on the way out the door, they reminded me that at 6 p.m. on Friday, there is a UAS drum clinic with Phil Paramore. So you might want to take that in. It's at 6 o'clock. Any level of musical training is more than welcome, and he'll be doing that drum clinic at the UAS Rec Center starting at 6 o'clock on Friday. My next three guests are here to tell us about optional programs in the Juneau School District. And with me are Barbara Cadanti Nelson, Dave Stoltenberg, and Sarah Marino. Let's start with Sarah and tell us the scope of the optional programs that are available through our school district.
Thanks, Pat. The Juneau School District has a lot of optional programs, and this time of the year is time to start the applications if you are interested. There's the charter school, Montessori, Homebridge, the homeschool program, and the Tlingit language and literacy program, and I supervise a few of those.
Now, you said application process, so these are optional programs. You don't just automatically get into these like you do into the third grade or something like that.
That's right. There's an application process, and you can get that application off the district website. The only difference is Homebridge has a different application, and you can get that directly from their website. The website's a great place to get that information, or the school district informational office.
Now, if you go to a movie theater or listen to KTOO, you find out that Homebridge is an alternate program, but I'm not sure everybody knows exactly what that is.
That's true. Homebridge is our district's homeschool program, and so it serves students K through 12 who would like to do their learning at home with the support of a parent, guardian, or other important adult in their life. And this can be a great way for families to do some education in a unique way. And we provide stipends to the families for curriculum and other services. So you can get some money to help with the education. The district provides some support services, takes care of the required state testing, And probably the best thing about Homebridge is you can participate in some of our district's sports and other activities.
Barbara, you're in charge of a unique program, I think, through our school district.
Well, I co-supervise the staff of the PCLL program with Dave Stoltenberg, the principal. It's a district-wide program that is housed at the Harborview School.
And the nature of that program is?
The nature of the program, actually, it was conceived by the expectation of the Native community to transform the system to meet the needs of the Native children so that the curriculum and instruction and the vision would meet the needs of this special audience to deliver culturally relevant place-based education and heritage language instruction.
So, Dave, you two work together to provide this at which school?
At Harborview.
Harborview, okay.
Yep.
Yeah.
So we have three multi-level classrooms, a K-1, a 2-3, and a 4-5. And so the uniqueness of the program, as Barb alluded to, is the place-based instruction, the relevancy of place here, along with language. Students get 30 minutes of language, Tlingit language every day, and then we infuse the culture within the standards that are taught K through 5.
Is Tlingit taught anywhere else?
In our school district?
No, anywhere else. Does Ketchikan or Sitka or anybody have a Tlingit language program? Do we know?
I know Sitka has in the past done a little bit. I don't know what they're doing right now.
I'm just curious.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
To me, there's not, you know, this isn't something that's widely done.
Right. So that's true, but it is
like
happening in the
community. Yeah. Now, there's a huge interest building at the University of Alaska Southeast in Native languages. I have people from that program up here on the show all the time doing various things. The Dowen Hours kind of kicked it really hard, and then they've turned it into it's almost a major now up on campus. Are you affiliated in any – do you call on those resources in any way?
You know, we have had we've had some students from UAS that have come into our school throughout the years, and yeah, to a degree, along with the MAT students, but yes, to a certain degree, Ms. Jones, I'm trying to recall her name now, but at UAS has called several times and asked me for people that would be interested or teachers that would. Help with that.
I think Lance Twitchell up there has been trying to do quite a bit with Native Pride. He's kind of on a sort of a mission to restore an image of pridefulness to the Natives. So.
Well, too, it's real important to point out that it has great support from the Native community and specific entities such as Gold Belt Heritage Foundation, Sea Alaska Heritage Institute, Douglas Indian Association, and the local ANS and AMB camps. It's really a community endeavor, and there's great support for the quality to be of a high standard. And so we have tradition bearers, elders coming into the classroom, and as you mentioned, students that are learning how to develop and deliver culturally relevant education.
Yeah, for example, David Katzik and Grandma Selena have been in as elders throughout the entire school year. On Monday mornings, David meets with all three classrooms in the gymnasium and presents for about 30 minutes, I think it is. And then students do dance and just learn the tribal heritage here. So I think it's really important. But the elder program is really an important part of the whole TCLL program too. So.
Now, I don't want to short the other programs here, so thank you very much for kind of awakening.
Sure.
This is an optional program as well.
On April 18th, parents are welcome anytime, of course, but kindergarten registration is on the 18th, and that is the same time that TCLL registration will occur, too.
Okay. And then we have the charter school, and we also have Montessori in the midst of all of this.
Yes, we do. And I know charter school came in and talked last week.
They're doing an open house coming up very shortly.
They are. Yeah. And I also supervise the Montessori program, which is an amazing program. It's first grade through eighth grade, and there are multi-grade classrooms as well that really emphasize deep learning in content areas through projects and community relationships.
The question I wanted to ask, now we've kind of seen the universe here, I think. Have we covered all of the programs? Have we named them all?
We have. Okay. I'd like to point out really quick, we have parent information nights for Montessori this week. So that's something really important if people are interested. On Thursday the 28th at 5:30 is our first parent night, and then Saturday the 30th at 10 a.m. And both of those events are in the Montessori Commons, which is in the Marie Drake building, right between Harborview and Juno Douglas.
Okay. Now, let me ask this question. We've also had a couple of discussions. We have a regular feature on Tuesday afternoons of JDS coming in, and one of those discussions a while back was about the budget. And we've been following the building of the school budget and all that sort of process that's going on even now in the middle of the school board. We're facing a shortfall, and these are optional programs. So the question is, are all of them going to survive? Are these going to all continue?
Right now, there is no intention of cutting any of the programs. Programs that have had some reduced enrollment over the last couple years may have some of the support services reduced, it looks like. But right now, the intention is to keep all of these programs, and which is really wonderful because it gives options to families and students for the different needs and learning styles. And actually, when enrollment is strong in these programs, it can bring extra funding to the district. So that's what our hope is making sure people are aware that they can find a good match for their child and their family, and that we can keep these great options going in Juneau.
Let's make sure then that people have information on the opportunity to sign up for these optional programs. So from the top, there is not like an open house for Homebridge, right?
Nope. Homebridge, you can make an appointment at any time and come in and talk to us about what it's like.
Okay, so. Good. And then you gave it the dates and times for the open house for Montessori. That's Thursday the 28th at 7:30?
5:30,
and 10 a.m. on Saturday the 30th.
Oh, please, not 10 p.m. Yes, 10 a.m. Saturday the 30th.
And both of those are at Marie Drake.
That's correct.
Okay, and the open houses or the possibility of signing up for your program?
Yeah, for the TCLL, really any time, but we're focusing on April 18th from 1:30 to 4:30 for TCLL, and then, again, the kindergarten district-wide will take place that same day, from 1:30 till 5 o'clock.
You don't have the dates for the charter school open house, do you? The poster's down on the
charter board. School for kindergarten is Wednesday, April 3rd from 2 to 4, and then middle school is Wednesday, April 3rd from 4 to 6.
Okay.
So
lots of possibilities right now to get on the roll to find out, first of all, to explore the possibility of being in one of these optional programs, and then to go through the process of actually getting in.
Right. Mm-hmm. And those programs that have fewer open spaces, the application, again, go to the district website. The first application is due April 19th. That's for the first lottery. But any time after that, people can still submit applications, but grade levels and programs that don't have as many openings, if you want the best chance, it needs to be in by the 19th.
You bet. Okay. Thank you very much for telling us about this. Sarah Marino, Dave Stoltenberg, and Barbara Cadianti-Nelson, thank you for coming down from, I know your insane schedules, and and opening the doors to people who want to take part in these programs.
Thank you, Pat.
Thanks, Pat.
Harp music in the background is from Diana Stork. She's doing a program on Saturday at 7:30 at the Northern Lights United Church. You're in tune with KTOO in Juneau. We're at 104.3 FM in downtown Juneau and Douglas. We're also on a set of translators throughout the area. In Lemon and Slicer Creek, we're on K269 AO at 101.7. Valley and Auk Bay hears us on K276 AF 103.1. Gustavus is on K201 AM at 88.1. K220 BT serves Hoonah at in 91.9. And in Icy Strait and Excursion Inlet, we're at 89.9.